2020 is on track to be one of the hottest years on record. But the exposure to this extreme heat depends on where you live. The temperature of one neighborhood could be as much as 20 degrees hotter than another. And much like with COVID-19, communities of color are disproportionately bearing the brunt of this temperature disparity. One recent study indicates that this might be by design. Earlier this year, researchers at Portland State University and the Science Museum of Virginia linked the temperature disparities we're seeing today to racist housing policies from decades past. And now we turn to the authors. One of the authors of that study, Vivek Chandas, is a professor of urban studies and planning at Portland State University. Vivek, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So in the study, you looked at more than 100 cities in the U.S. What's the degree of difference in terms of temperature between Black neighborhoods and white neighborhoods?
So across the country, we surveyed about 108 cities, and systematically we were finding that there was a pattern of about 5 degrees difference in terms of Fahrenheit that's averaged across the entire country. And in some cities, that difference was upwards of 13 degrees Fahrenheit. And so what we're seeing is a real disparity in terms of who's getting exposed to this extreme heat.
And are there differences that are more pronounced depending on which cities we're talking about? Like, where are certain disparities more striking from a geographic standpoint?
Right. So this is something we're still digging into. This is one of these correlative studies where we're just looking for really broad patterns. And one of the things that emerged for us immediately was that 94% of the cities that we looked at had this pattern where historically redlined areas were always hotter than their non-redlined counterparts. And so this history of disinvestment that had occurred in these redline neighborhoods was very stark and very easy to pick up in this kind of a broad survey of cities. Geographically, we were finding that there are several cities that really ranked in the top. The city, completely coincidentally, the city that I live in, Portland, Oregon, which is, needless to say, been on the news a lot lately, ranked number one on that list. And that's where we saw the temperature difference of 13 degrees Fahrenheit. And so that really got us thinking. The next city was Denver, Colorado, then came Minneapolis, then came the usual suspects that we've heard a lot about in the news in terms of Baltimore and Jacksonville and Orlando and Chicago, as well as Philadelphia. So there are these set of cities that just followed the top three. And so we're really starting now to look into those specific cities, why they're ranking so high, what happened historically, what were some of the local policies that occurred that created this massive disparity in terms of heat.
I mean, you're talking about disparities within the same city, right? These are neighborhoods within the same city. These aren't from city to city even.
Correct. So even within the city, we have certain areas that have had massive freeways go through, that have had large public housing complexes, that have had all the kind of permissive and undesirable land uses go to these neighborhoods that were historically redlined over the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. And all those things that the wealthier, often whiter neighborhoods didn't want ended up in these neighborhoods. And that's where we're seeing a lot of this disparity.
Vivek, are there other, I want to get back to sort of how this happened, like why, what explains the heat disparities? You mentioned things like freeways, but what about things like trees?
Right. So we started, we've been conducting these campaigns where we go around and work with community organizations to go and collect temperature and humidity measurements throughout the country. And one of the things we started seeing as we were going about engaging these vast kind of cadre of volunteers to collect these temperature and humidity measurements at very fine resolution, very really granular stuff, we started seeing that the neighborhoods and the volunteers would comment to us that the neighborhoods they were driving through just had, many of them had fewer trees, had very different land uses. And so we started looking at this in relation to sociodemographics, who was living there. And we noticed that there was a very clear pattern of lack of tree cover in these locations. And so what happens is when you put a freeway down, you put a big box store down with all that asphalt parking lot, that really seals up the ground, and there's much less space for anything else that can go. And so you're kind of squeezing out trees in the sense of putting down all of this asphalt, these big box stores, these freeways. And so what now communities have to do in order to be able to cool their neighborhoods with trees is work even harder to now tear up that old asphalt, tear up that concrete. And I'm in touch with so many planners and urban foresters that are talking about how do we expand canopy in places that have so much surface ceiling of asphalt. So that's the one of the biggest conundrums that we're faced with now, is that these historical planning and design policies went in place in such a way that they really make it even harder now to be able to cool those areas, as opposed to the non-redline counterparts where we can get trees in much easier today. And so we have a lot of work ahead of us.
And Vivek, I want to make sure we get this in. We've got about 2 minutes left here, but I'm curious about the health effects of heat, particularly in the communities that you're talking about. I grew up in a community such as this, and so I'm wondering, is there physical or mental health issues that happen as a result of extreme heat for people who live in these communities?
Oh, absolutely. It's one of the silent and most discriminating killers that we know of at this point. It's outside of COVID, it's been one of the largest killers in terms of natural hazards that the U.S. and many places around the world face. And so what happens is it's often a heat wave comes through, which are growing also intensity, duration, and frequency around the country. It essentially affects the body through physical response. So this is your ability to thermoregulate. Once you reach that 37 Celsius or a 98.6 Fahrenheit threshold and your body's not able to sweat and get that heat out, certain organs start to fail. And so what you start seeing is those that are most vulnerable, especially those that have pre-existing health conditions, which COVID and many other health conditions would challenge them to be able to come through a heat wave well. If you have pre-existing condition, if you have lack of AC or ability to run the AC, those are really, really pernicious kinds of experiences and conditions that would expand and deepen the likelihood of mortality or morbidity. So it is a very intense killer that way.
Vivek Chandas is a professor of urban studies and planning at Portland State University. Vivek, thanks for being with me.
Appreciate that. Thanks. Take care.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.